Welcome to
Behind the Beat,
a podcast hosted by Sylvia
and Maya.
Hi, Maya.
Hi, Sylvia.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Beat podcast.
Today's podcast is just going to be an unfiltered conversation between me and Sylvia. We've done 4 years together here at USC, and we've had a lot of conversations, and we thought, why not just record the conversations that we have at our apartment? And we'll cover topics like how we started our instruments, why we chose to be music majors, how we stay motivated within such like a demanding niche field, and just other fun games potentially that we might include in the podcast for fun.
You'll just have to keep listening and find out.
So, Sylvia, what is the first topic that we're going to be talking about?
So first, we wanted to give a little bit of background on how we got started on our instruments and why we chose to pursue classical music, and then how we ended up at USC. Maya, when did you start playing the violin?
So I started playing the violin at 3. Like, you know, when you're like 3 years old and your parents just sign you up for everything for you to just get exposure and see what you're good at. So, you know, I did things like ballet, swimming, like other forms of dance. I did both violin and piano. But the one thing that really just stuck throughout my childhood was violin. It's not like I necessarily like fell in love with it. It was just more like something that was consistently there. And something that's like, you know, playing an instrument is like good for you. And I started private lessons when I was like 8 years old, maybe, up until I was graduating high school. And what's funny is I actually wasn't going to pursue music at all. Even going into my undergrad, I was planning on double majoring at any school I went to. So I applied to mostly UC schools and schools that may not have the strongest of music programs. But then I applied to USC because it was the closest school to home and is a prestigious university, which also just happens to have a really good music school. And even though I was planning on double majoring at any undergrad, I technically still applied as a music major, and I did all the pre-screen stuff and the audition process. And then when I came here, I was like, oh, this is actually a lot of work, and I have to put in a lot more into this major than I expected. So then it ended up working out, and I'm really happy that it did. But my process with like pursuing classical music, I think it was just more like something that was always part of me and part of my identity in my life. So I couldn't imagine like not continuing to do so. I wasn't thinking that I was going to study it this intensely, but I knew that it was always going to be a part of my life. And then once I hit senior year, it kind of made sense for me to apply through there because I had repertoire ready. My teacher was already preparing me to apply for undergrad schools through a violin. So then it was more just kind of given to me more than like a choice. Obviously it was a choice, but I think it was more like handed to me, and which I'm very grateful for, because I think without that, I wouldn't be able to like pursue it the way I do now. But yeah, that's just kind of a little bit of background on how I chose violin and how I ended up at USC. But what about you? Well, how did you start flute, and what inspired you to come to USC and study flute performance?
Yeah, so I started flute when I was 7, which is actually like, I would say pretty early / normal for a wind instrument.
Yeah.
It's usually you can't, you don't have the lung capacity to play before then. So uh-huh. I started pretty young, and I began like in band in elementary school, as most people do. It was mostly my parents' idea, but I was, of course, super on board with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very hard at first, because with flute, you get out of breath when you first start, so you can't really play more than a couple notes without feeling dizzy or like feeling like you're gonna pass out.
Yeah.
So I would say that it came pretty naturally after that, after the first initial like trying not to pass out after I played.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was very natural. I was good at it. Like, I got compliments from people and like validation a lot. Mm-hmm. So that made me want to keep going and pursue it in high school and everything. I went to an art school in middle school where I like really got to dive deeper into that. And I don't think I really wanted to do music until I got to my junior year of high school, though, because before that it was very much like a fun hobby or a way to get praise from other people, just something I was good at on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was lucky enough to go to Interlochen one summer, and I just like fell in love with performing. And yeah, that's the summer when I decided like I would have to do that in college. And yeah, I applied to a bunch of schools. USC was definitely my top. And I had a lesson with the flute teacher here, and he was just, we were a great match together. So that kind of solidified it as my dream school. And yeah, here we are.
Wow. So glad that that worked out for the both of us. It's crazy how, like, you know, I feel like being able to pursue a music degree at a school like USC is so, like, you know, like a blessing. And I feel like sometimes I feel like I take it for an advantage because, like, there's so few of us that get to do that, you know?
Right.
Compared to maybe other schools within even just USC and other majors. But, like, let's say that you decided to not pursue music back when you were 18 in high school.
Okay.
What would you major in / what would you, like, pursue as a career in the future?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think, well, in high school, I really wanted to be a surgeon. I wanted to, like, go to med school and do that whole thing. Mm-hmm. Honestly, any kind of surgery. I didn't have anything in particular in mind. But I actually did a lot of, like, shadowing, and I was super into science and all that kind of stuff. And then I realized that I only wanted to do that because that's what society, like, deems a really cool and respectable career, I think. But, like, inside, that's not really what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if I had to make a different choice in high school, I would probably be doing medicine.
Yeah.
But if I had to make a different choice now, like, 100% journalism,
yeah,
I feel like that would just be a super cool career. And yeah, in another life, I would be a journalist. But
wow. And you would be able to, like, travel too.
Yeah,
and go to different places.
Yeah.
You know, that could be of interest.
Right. And I feel like I just love, like, writing and telling stories and, like, talking to people. So I think it would be a really cool career.
Wow.
But, I mean, music is similar in a lot of ways.
Right.
Just from a communication standpoint. And, yeah. But what about you?
What would I be doing? That's, like, a hard question because I, too, had a lot of just, like, interests. I always did well / was interested in, like, my math / science and STEM-based classes. I was opposite of you. I was never a writer. I still am not a writer. I would rather not type essays if I had to. But, so I think, I don't know. I was like, maybe, I do have a marketing minor, and I've taken classes in the Marshall School of Business, which I find interesting. I feel like you learn a lot about, like, collaborating with others, working in a team setting to create, like, a product or to sell something. I feel like that's a very, like, important thing, especially because as musicians, we've talked about before how we have to, like, almost sell ourselves through an audition process, through an application, through, you know, so many processes. But I feel like it's not for me personally, like, in the business realm, which I thought it would be. But I think maybe something more, like, individual, like math or, as bland as that sounds, I feel like I would go into, like, you know, working in, I don't know, like, sales through an applied math major, or I don't know, maybe even something like psychology, working with, like, I feel like psychology can also be associated to, like, music too, and, like, I feel like that intersection could be really interesting. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm happy that I chose what I did, and I feel like it suits me very well and how I work. So maybe that field, but I haven't thought too much about it beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's good that we are at a university where we can kind of explore those other things, even though we are very focused on music, and still kind of, like, tap into those interests as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we have a little game to switch things up. We are going to be playing There Are 10 But, mm-hmm. Classical Music Edition. Mm-hmm. So I have some questions for you, Maya, or some situations.
Okay.
The first one.
I'm so excited to hear these.
There are 10, but they play solos during orchestra warm-up.
Oh my God. This is one of my pet peeves. And I will say, like, I feel like I've been a victim of this before. Where, like, oh, it's like a little warm-up of, like, my Mendelssohn or Tchaikovsky. Like, no one asked, but I feel like I will. So, like, personally, that would bring them down to, like, a 3.
Oh, that far. 7-point jump.
Because that's just, like, so annoying. Like, I feel like if you're doing it in youth orchestra, okay, fine. But if you're a grown adult,
right,
and you're, like, practicing your solo, that would kind of send me. What about you? What would you?
I would say maybe a 6. I don't think it would go down to a 3. But I think it depends on like what solo you're playing. Okay, mm-hmm. if you're a section member but you're playing yeah. the principal's solo for or the piece you're about to play, oh, I think that's worse.
That's like a zero. Yeah. Like, that's awful.
But
that's...
if you're just like really quietly noodling around for a piece you have mm-hmm. to like play later in your lesson, like okay.
Okay, yeah.
But I think it's different from playing really loudly, like a standard concerto or something. Yeah, I don't right. know.
Like you're fully doing that because you want to be heard at that point.
Right, exactly. So it depends on their intention, I think.
Okay.
Okay, the second one. They're a 10, but their favorite composer is Mozart.
Okay, hot take. Hot take, but I feel like, I really appreciate Mozart. And I okay. personally love Mozart. And I don't love playing Mozart, but I'll listen to Mozart, and I understand why things like Mozart and Bach are such, like, standards.
Okay, that's
even,
true.
Even, you don't have to like it. I feel like a lot of people don't. But I feel like that doesn't bring, like, I feel like they're still, like, a 10. Actually, no. If that's your favorite, I'll give you, like, a 9. Because there's definitely better, okay, oh, well, fair. Subjectively better composers.
Okay, but they're a music major, and their favorite is Mozart.
But some people just love Mozart like that. I don't know.
That's true.
Because it's so standard, okay. And, like, I feel like, you know how they ask for it in every audition? I feel like Mozart is very telling of how it you is. Are as a player, and, like, I feel like it's not a lot of composers, like, pieces are like that, you know?
Yeah, it's very revealing.
Yeah, it is very revealing, which is also scary. But then also, it's like, it's your favorite.
Okay, wait, but maybe if it's their favorite and they're a musician, yeah. that means they're really good.
Oh.
Because if you like playing confident. Mozart that much, that's yeah, you true. Have to be confident.
Okay. Then they're at 8.
But it went down one.
It went down. Because that means they're too egotistical.
Oh, okay. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
The next one. They're 10, but they always show up late for chamber. Like over 10 minutes. Like every time.
Oh, that's really... Wait, like have you acknowledged it or no?
Let's say you acknowledged it once.
But they're still showing up
And they're
up
still
late.
Showing up
Oh,
late.
That's like a one. Because if they're showing up late to chamber, they're not going to show up, like, as a friend or, like, a colleague in true. Other settings, right?
That's so true.
So I feel like that
yeah.
demotes you a lot.
That's really true. Like, the reliability
exactly,
is not there.
Exactly.
Okay. They're a 10, but they have perfect pitch.
10!
No!
So, backstory, I have perfect pitch, and every time there's, like, a fun fact or, like a party trick, it tends to be my perfect pitch, and it's a little bit annoying, but I will say if someone tries to, like, one up my perfect pitch, that's very annoying, and, like, I would be annoyed by me, too, so...
Perfect pitch off?
Yeah, perfect pitch off. So, okay, maybe not a 10, maybe, like, a 7.
Okay,
it's not too big of a deal, but it's, like, don't show it off too much.
Mm. So you can have it, but, like, don't talk about
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. You have to keep it on the DL.
Exactly.
They're a 10, but they ask everyone, how much do you practice and how much did your instrument cost?
Wait, I literally know people who do this, like,
really?
All the time, yeah.
Like, even how much their instrument costs?
Yes. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty annoying. I feel like that's, like a 5.
Okay.
Because I feel like at some point, it's just, like, your own personal, you know, practice schedule or, like, and who cares how much your instrument costs? That's just, like, a personal thing, too. But I guess people are curious. But don't ask me more than once.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Like that.
So I think it's also, like, the situation.
True.
That you ask. Like, if you
true.
Just ask out of nowhere, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But if you're, like, I don't know. If they're interested in buying an instrument and they're, like,
yeah,
genuinely
yeah,
wondering.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But, yeah, I do know people that just will, like, ask those yeah. questions out of nowhere.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that was a fun game. Me and Sylvia play that here and there. We just talk about topics like that. So that was a fun addition to the podcast.
Yes.
Next topic is a very important one, I feel like, for any musician, is how we stay motivated. I feel like that's always just going to be a constant struggle that never goes away. It's no person is ever going to be intrinsically or extrinsically motivated at all times, you know, while pursuing something like music. So how would you say are some things that you do that help you stay motivated?
I would say the main thing for me is finding interests outside of music that make me motivated to continue music. So for an example, I have a Spanish minor, so that's kind of a way that I can, like, focus on something else during my day and then go back to the practice room and maybe have a fresh perspective on it, or just spend a little bit of time not thinking about music so it's not mm-hmm. consuming my brain and then I don't get burnt out.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say like finding other things that inspire me. Also maybe listening to my favorite players, or if I'm having a day where I just really don't feel good about my playing or I really mm-hmm. don't want to practice, then taking the day off if I can and then coming back yeah. when I'm in a better mindset.
Yeah.
What about you? Agreed.
I think for me, I agree with everything you just said. I think I also use those tactics to help me stay motivated. I think for me, I'm a very like a structurally organized person, so I really enjoy structure. And when, like, such as right now when we're in a school environment, we have, you know, we have a weekly lesson, we have rehearsals to prepare for, we have auditions to be taking. I feel like having that like external like pressure at all times, although it can be like a lot at times and can lead to burnout, which we'll talk about in a different episode. I think having that kind of like pressure, I think helps me stay motivated and be like, oh, I want to do the best for myself. I want to put my best foot forward and like show what I am capable to these people through like the panel or to my teacher or to my chambermates, to the orchestra. I feel like having that kind of goal for myself is a way that I've stayed motivated. I will say sometimes it becomes inconsistent because I'll be like very in like one-minded into this one goal or one thing that I really want to get done, and then once I get done then I get really tired or I'm like, oh, I can relax now, and then it's kind of like a little bit inconsistent. But I think that's something that I will continue to work on and have a need to work on. And I think it's all just, you know, taking it day by day and doing like what you can do best.
Right. So. Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Just yeah. also like if you're feeling overwhelmed, look at it from smaller chunks of things mm. you have to do instead of like, oh, I need to win an orchestral job this year. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the reality of a conservatory education and the similarities and differences to our expectations going in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering from your perspective, Maya, what did you think studying at a like music conservatory type school would be like? And has it met your expectations? Has it been different?
Well, I think we have a unique conservatory experience because we're also engulfed in this university setting, right? And I feel like not a lot of like high level conservatories can say that about their school. And I think it's interesting because I had a very unique experience where I came into USC not really involved in the music scene. Like I didn't go to pre-college. I only studied with like really one main teacher, and I didn't really go to festivals growing up. I was just like, you know, individually like working with that teacher. And so it wasn't really until I got to USC that I was exposed to like a community of any kind of classical musicians that, you know, we all get put in like oral skills and theory and just like doing the same thing. And I feel like it felt like culture shock because it's like this is something that's been a part of me for so long, but then I'm introduced to this whole another like field of like, you know, people and concepts that I haven't even like thought about. So I feel like it was really not what I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but I feel like it was the complete opposite. I am really grateful though that I got to do it in a university environment because I think I got to like balance it out a little and start to like adjust to that easier than I feel like if I was put into like a conservatory, I would have just been so out of place and very like uncomfortable, I feel like. And I feel like USC Thornton does a good job about like creating this like community aspect that doesn't make it feel that way. I know we talked about that with Lavery's episode about like what makes Thornton special and things like that, but honestly really was not what I was expecting at all, and for good reasons and bad reasons, I feel like. I'm curious as to see what an actual conservatory like more not in a university setting is, and for graduate school, potentially, I would be interested in going to a conservatory and seeing how that differs from my experience here. But who knows what will happen? I don't know. It was just definitely very different to what I was expecting. What about you? Because I know you went to Interlochen, and so you were surrounded by like more kids like that were, I guess, like similar to you. And you did go to an art school for high school as well, so maybe like a little bit more exposure there. How was like your experience attending a conservatory. Yeah.
I would say it's pretty much the exact opposite of mm-hmm. what you just said, because yeah. you were very much like an individual player, and I was always like playing with other people yeah. at school, and then like in youth orchestra, and then going to Interlaken and everything. Yeah. It was very much about collaboration, but I didn't really have like the individual part of it mm-hmm. as solid, I would say. Like, I didn't grow up having weekly private lessons or mm-hmm. anything, and I didn't even really start like practicing over 3 hours a day until my last 2 years of high school. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like late in the game when I really started focusing on the individual aspect of yeah. it. So yeah, I think coming to music school, what was hard for me is how much you have to do on your own mm-hmm. and like how isolating it can feel sometimes, because I was used to just playing with everyone all the time yeah. and like really being part of the music community, which you definitely are here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think I underestimated how much time I would be alone in the practice room and really having to motivate myself and keep myself disciplined throughout it all. But I am like very grateful for this experience and to have the time to practice. I think that's something that's really unique about this school, is that we have our GE classes, but then we also have our music classes and the time to practice. It's kind of all balanced, mm-hmm. so you get a little bit of everything,
yeah.
which is very nice. But yeah, I would say another thing that differs from my expectations is that it's not competitive at all,
right.
or at least in my experience.
Yeah.
Because I think even in high school, there was some competition there. Mm-hmm. And then definitely at Interlaken, like, it's very competitive. I think we had 2 or 3 placement auditions while we were there. So you're always trying to, like, get a higher chair,
yeah.
always trying to, like, be better than other people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very, like, collaborative here, I would say. Okay. And no one's focused on, oh, who's sitting higher for this? Like, it's not even something that we really think about
yeah.
that much,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
which has been very nice.
Yes.
Especially for undergrad.
Yeah.
Like, not being a part of a toxic environment is
100%
very nice.
Agreed. And our next topic is obviously, you know, classical music. I feel like classical musicians are very passionate about, you know, like, the style of playing, or, like, for example, an example might be, like, Bach can be interpreted in so many different ways. I think every individual has a different way of viewing and interpreting Bach, and with whether that's like not just Bach, but obviously concertos, and like honestly any piece that you play, like I feel like could be, you know, interpreted differently. And I think something that I like to do to get different interpretations is watch so many recordings and watch so many, you know, people, not just violinists, but chamber groups, like, I don't know, it could be, like, a wind quartet, it could be, like, a symphony, it could be, like, a bass soloist. Like, I love just, like, watching recordings, and I feel like you learn a lot just by watching and listening to other people's interpretations. So, who would you say are some of your, like, I don't know, it doesn't have to be flutists, but just, like, performers, people that you look up to within the classical world? They could be dead or alive. Who are some of your favorite people, too?
Dead or alive? I could say Mozart.
No, for real.
I would say that I really actually like watching performers who aren't flute players. I mean, obviously, I love watching flute players,
yeah.
too, but I think listening to people, like, Hilary Hahn, of course,
mm-hmm.
like Jacqueline Dupre.
Yeah.
My favorite flute player is Jasmine Choi. And mm-hmm. I think the thing that draws me to these people in particular is just how they can like connect to their audience on a musical level.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much every major soloist can do that, or they wouldn't
right.
be so successful. But
yeah.
I think like those people, it just listening to them and watching them perform really resonates with me, and I can really feel the connection
mm-hmm.
through the music, and I can feel what they're trying to portray.
Yeah.
So I think that's why those are my idols. I mean, my teacher, of course. Shout out to
Iconic.
Kathy Caroli. Yeah, I have so many classical music idols, but I would say out of the most famous people, those are my top three.
Oh.
What about you?
That's so hard to say. There's just so many great players, right? Like, that are still performing, or some are retired, some have become teachers. And I feel like the classic, like, big violinists right now are, like, Itzhak Perlman, Gil Shaham, Vengerov, Hadalik. Like, I think I've watched all 4 of them perform live, and have been incredible experiences. And I've even got to meet some of them, which is like when you meet your idol, that's like crazy, yeah. Like fangirling so hard. But I feel like, I don't know, those like icons are some of my favorites, but there's like a lot of underrated, I feel like, performers too. And obviously now there's so much talent everywhere, and like there's no more like top players anymore because everyone is just so good in their own way. And I can't think. I also like to listen to and watch people that are not just violinists, like I don't know too many like flute players, but I think I enjoy. And recently, not just like soloists, but I feel like because I have started to understand that I want to like go into orchestra and work on excerpts and stuff, I feel like I have also become interested in like watching like master classes from like concert masters of like big philharmonics, like, and seeing how they like work on excerpts and like all the hard work that goes into it. I feel like watching those have kind of been like more of interest to me recently, more than like watching like soloists, because I'm like, oh, this is like the process that goes into it, and I feel like this is what they put into their work to become who they are, and I feel like that's really inspiring. And like, yeah, like seeing your idols like, you know, talk about like the work in that way that they put in, I feel like it's very, I don't know, motivating for me too as like a student, being like, oh, well, that could be me one day, right? And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like just more every day, I feel like I find new people to look up to and listen and learn from, which is like so valuable. Mm-hmm. And I love that about music, that you can just like share like music in that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think related to what you were saying about listening to master classes,
yeah,
is that the different areas within classical music are so different and require very different skill sets. I think when a lot of people think of the greatest performers, they think of like Yo-Yo Ma or soloists like that.
Mm-hmm.
But being a section player honestly takes just as much work, yeah, and it's a very different skill set. And then same with being a freelancer or a teacher. So yeah, I think that's a really good point that you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we want to switch it up a little bit and talk about unspoken orchestra rules. So for anyone who's not a classical musician, these are basically unspoken rules. So like guidelines that you follow, but they're not ever really explicitly talked about.
Right.
It's just a general understanding that people have once you play in orchestra,
right,
things you do and don't do.
Yes. And I feel like now that we've been playing, I feel like we've been playing in orchestra like our whole lives. So I feel like in youth orchestra, like it's more just like for the experience, you're having fun, you go on these like youth orchestra like field trips, and it's more just like to play together as a unit. But I feel like now once you start studying, like getting a degree in it, like people obviously, as they should, take it seriously. And you know, I'm sure we broke quote unquote some rules or just like underlying things that people think about, you know, when we were like freshmen or like underclassmen, not knowing these were like unspoken rules. So yeah, I feel like one of them that there's so many, right?
There's so many.
I feel like even just like showing up like prepared on time, like or things that like I feel like anyone should expect, but surprisingly is not followed all the time.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like you, out of respect for like yourself, the conductor, out of the people playing with you, I feel like that's something that you should be doing the bare minimum of, is coming to rehearsal on time, prepared, like knowing your part, knowing what other people are doing around you. And I don't know, I feel like it's a little bit disrespectful when it's like visibly or like audibly shown that like you are not coming prepared. You know?
Right. One thing I've learned from taking a conducting class this semester is how much preparation it takes for a conductor to be ready for even the first reading.
Yeah.
Like, if the orchestra is sight reading, the conductor would have already had to know the entire score, would already have to make markings of cues and everything.
Yeah.
So I'm just imagining, like, from our perspective, if a conductor showed up and they didn't know, like, a time signature switch, or they, like, missed a really important cue and stuff, like, we would be annoyed by that.
Yeah.
So, likewise, we need to put in the effort 100%. To not waste other people's time.
I agree.
Yeah. I think some unspoken rules that I can think of, well, obviously not playing other people's solos, like
we talked about before. Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
I would say not turning around when other people are playing their solos. Even if it's meant as a compliment, I think it's just, it like makes people nervous.
Yeah. And you're not like a zoo animal, you know? You're not playing a solo to be like looked at. It's just part of the music. And as a string player, I wasn't aware of that personally, and I feel bad when, you know, that's like an etiquette thing that you learn. It's like, you're not supposed to turn around and just stare at the wind or brass or percussion player playing a solo. Like, you yeah. stay respectful.
But yeah. I think it's different for you guys because, I mean, at least for me, if I'm playing a solo and a yeah. string player looks, it's not as bad as, like, me fully turning all the way around in my chair.
Right.
Because you guys are kind of at an angle, so yeah. it's not as, like, obvious.
Right.
But I think for us, it would be a little bit more rude.
Boy, that's true. Fully turning around and, like,
fully
looking at the trumpet.
Swiveling me. Around, yeah. yeah.
That is true. That is yeah. an etiquette thing. What else is... I thought there's so much orchestra etiquette.
There's a lot. I think another one I would say is not tapping your foot.
Yeah.
Because some people get annoyed by that.
100%.
And then also... bringing your own pencil, because I think sometimes it can get annoying if you're always the person that's asking to borrow someone yeah. else's pencil,
yeah.
and then it looks to the conductor like, oh, maybe it's them that didn't bring the pencil.
Yeah. And another thing might be, like, knowing your place as, like, either a principal or a section player.
Yeah.
Like, you should know when and when you shouldn't be, like, speaking up, or when you should or should not be talking to your section or talking... like, to the conductor. I feel like you should know your role and know your place and time. And I feel like you just need to be, like, aware, right? Like, of, like, oh, this is not the time and place for me to be saying anything. Or, like, oh, I should speak up because clearly we're not together. I feel like just awareness is a big thing in orchestra as well, because it's essentially just, like, a huge chamber group, right? You guys are all, like, collaborating and playing together. And I feel like that's definitely one thing that I've learned, that I'm like, oh, you just have to be aware of, like, you know, how people are feeling, like, what the vibe is, when the time and place is right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think similar to that is, if you have a question, maybe asking your principal or your section leader mm-hmm. before you go to the maestro. Because
yeah.
I think it would be kind of weird if, like, the last stand in the section has a question, but instead of asking up, they just, like, go straight to the maestro.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of like they skip that person.
Agreed.
In between.
Agreed.
I don't know if that's one that other people think, but I
no,
just
I
for me, like, I would probably do that. I would ask the principal first.
No, 100%. I agree with that. I don't know, it's just like, I think, like, you're even if you're last stand, you obviously have a say in, like, you know, like, a question or a say in, like, a suggestion, but it's more just out of, like, a, it also saves time for everyone, because then, like, you know, you don't have to, like, ask in front of the whole orchestra, or, like, maybe someone else already had that answer before you went to the conductor. So I feel like
right.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
And then lastly, so those are just some unspoken. I'm sure there's so many more that we could think of. I feel like orchestra culture is a whole, like, we could probably go into, like, a whole episode about just, like, orchestra culture, etiquette, like...
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
And a lot of them you have to learn through trial and error.
Exactly.
Because no one's giving you these guidelines.
No,
like,
it's
oh,
not like
don't
a
tap
book
your foot.
Yeah. It's just kind of like an experience you have to go through, and then you learn, and then you're like, okay,
exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
So it's something that I could go into. But our very last topic is, what are some hot takes? That's, like, Sylvia's, like, favorite word. Some hot takes within classical music that you have.
Oh, let me think. One hot take of mine, I actually don't know if this is a hot take,
mm-hmm.
but I don't like Haydn at all.
Me neither.
I don't like his music.
No, I don't either.
Yeah.
Like,
I think for other composers, like, even if I don't like their music, I can still appreciate it, and I wouldn't complain about playing it.
Right.
But Haydn, like,
and everything
I don't
sounds
know.
The same. And he has
yeah.
so much, like, repertoire, and they
yeah.
all sound the same.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
But, like, I kind of still appreciate his music, and I feel like there's a reason why he's a big name.
Right.
But personally, I would agree.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's, these are all our personal opinions.
Yeah, personal opinions. Wait, you know what else is kind of a big hot take that I feel like is a pretty burning hot take?
What?
Is I think that especially if, let's say there's, like, four, like, three movements or four movements, and I understand that because of, like, tradition and culture, we're not supposed to clap until the end, but I personally think that if you played this really fiery, like, first movement, and it's, like, so exciting and, like, anticipate, like, you know, like, you're, like on the edge of your seat, I feel like it's so anticlimactic for it to just be silent, and then you move on to the next movement.
Oh.
I think that you should be allowed to clap between movements with, like, exceptions. Obviously, there's like, times where it doesn't make sense to, because it connects, or, like, it's not the time, you know?
Right.
But sometimes I'm just like, oh, I just want to, like, clap so badly to acknowledge that, like, wow, that was, like, an incredible, like, performance.
Interesting.
Which is a hot take.
That is a hot take. I've never heard that before. Hot take.
But I feel like, some settings, I'm just like, oh, it would make sense for us to, like, acknowledge it instead of just That's us, like, true. Waiting until the very end.
You that know? Is true. Right. Sometimes it feels weird if you do a big, like, finale and then no one claps exactly. and you just have to move on.
Exactly. And then you're just like, okay. And then you don't hear, like, the applause until, like, what, like, 30 minutes later, and right. you're like, oh, thanks for that.
Okay, that's
like,
true.
And I other people have talked about this, too. They're like, really? Oh, I feel like it's like, we should, like, move past that. I feel like, I don't know why, like, we still do that. And I was like, oh, now thinking about it, you're kind of right.
But I think then it creates a gray area where people aren't sure no, if they should I clap know. Or not, and then I it can know. Be awkward if yeah. you are the only one clapping.
No, you're so right. So maybe it's just a suggestion, a yes. hot take, yeah. if you will. So
I can see that.
Yeah.
I agree with that one.
Yeah.
Let me try to think. I know I have more classical music.
No, we've definitely talked about this, and I feel like I'm just, like, blanking.
We definitely have. I think one hot take is that we need to normalize concertos that aren't strings or upper winds.
Agreed.
We need more, like, agreed. Where are the viola concertos? Yeah. Where are the double bass concertos?
I agree.
I would love to hear a trombone concerto. I don't think I've ever heard one.
Yeah. And I feel like they exist. It just... so rare, and even in competitions, like, they just typically don't place, which, like, understandable, but also a lot of it is because they're not given good repertoire to
right.
play, which is not anyone's fault, but I feel like we need to acknowledge that, and, like, to be fair, I guess a lot of those, like, double bass and, like, bassoon or, like, those instruments tend to go into, like, orchestral playing and, like, much less, like, solo rep, because I feel like upper winds and strings are a lot more asked for solos,
yes.
you know, even in the modern, like, contemporary world. So, but at the same time, that shouldn't take away from their repertoire, and I feel like we need to be more inclusive about that. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's coming from a string and upper wind player.
Yeah, exactly.
We advocate for that.
We want to share the spotlight.
We do. Yeah, that could. Let's think. I feel like I have definitely more hot takes.
Probably talked about a lot more.
We probably have, but maybe that can be for next time. You know,
for next time. Stay
for
tuned.
Next time, stay tuned. But yeah, it's kind of our unfiltered thoughts and, you know, just conversations that we have that we thought could be a good add to this podcast.
Yeah, kind of lighten things up for this middle episode.
Yeah, we hope you enjoy. We personally had a lot of fun talking about all this. And yeah.
We'll see you in the next episode.
We'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to
Behind the Beat,
a podcast hosted by Sylvia
and Maya.